again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today from late January winter morning in Vancouver, and I'll be speaking across the country because I have the pleasure of chatting this morning with Marie-Laurence Tremblay, who's a PhD student working in the Maastricht program, but is also employed as a simulation educator in Université Laval, Quebec, towards the east of Canada. I've asked her for some time to speak today because she and her co-authors have a paper coming out in the April 2019 issue of Medical Education entitled Simulation-Based Education for Novices, Complex Learning Tasks Promote Reflective Practice. Marie-Laurence, this is a busy time of life for you with a PhD and a job and a young child. I definitely appreciate you taking the time to talk about this project.
Oh, well, thank you, but the pleasure's all mine, really.
So how long have you been working as a simulation educator? What leads one down that career path?
So I guess I started really in 2011, so not yet 10 years ago. So yeah, so they were designing a new competency-based curriculum for our pharmacy students. So I was hired then to design a new simulation-based curriculum for our undergraduate program. So that's where it all started, I guess.
And you were obviously noticing some things in your experiences in that role and generated enough curiosity that you wound up enrolling in a master's and now a PhD. Can you describe for those listening what challenges you were struggling with or what curiosities you were seeing that made you think you would like to study this more formally?
Yeah, well, actually, the interesting thing is that when I started designing these simulations, I, like you said, had more a clinical background and not so much of an educational background. So I went to the literature trying to help me design the best way I could these simulations. And what struck me the most at this time was that a highly immersive simulation for novices was rather new, and it had typically been used for more advanced learners like medical residents or professional in practice. And so many people were arguing at the time that for novices, you should probably not use immersive simulations, but rather use less intensive learning experiences because these simulations can be really authentic, but also can probably a little bit too complex for inexperienced learners, which, you know, I wasn't so sure I agreed with that at the time. I understand how overwhelming can an immersive simulation be for a novice, for an inexperienced learner, but it's also possible, I think, to adapt the learning situation to account for that lack of experience and still expose them to really authentic clinical situations without overwhelming them. But for that, I think it's important to understand really what makes the experience complex to be able to better adapt it in the future. So I guess I wanted to, you know, deepen my understanding of all of this, and then did my MHB and then later on my PhD, because I thought that there was so much to do, especially also in the pharmacy field. I think we were pretty, you know, new at this at the time.
So that actually is an interesting question in and of itself, just by way of better understanding the context. The majority of our listeners, I'm sure, are not from pharmacy and might not have a sense of what simulation looks like in that environment. Can you give us an example or some sense as to what a truly authentic experience might look like?
Yeah, sure. At Laval, we are very lucky to have what we call a professional practice lab. So we have little pharmacy workstations that are fully equipped with real authentic material we could find in pharmacy. So, of course, the medication that we use in real life, but also the computer softwares and that we use for electronic patient records, telephones and everything. So all the material and the environment that we could find in a real community pharmacy setting, we have in our lab. And the type of situations that we have our student practice, you know, can vary depending on at which point they are in the program. So the situations can be really simple, over-the-counter situation where a patient comes with a simple headache, and then you have to collect data and then find among the many possible options in the over-the-counter medication, which is the best for that patient. And the situations can become more and more complex as they become a little bit more proficient and used to the different clinical content. So at a later stage, we have our students practice, for example, situations with blood pressure patient who comes to the pharmacy, wants to only refill the prescription, but then as you ask the patient how it's going with the prescription, you could discover, for example, that this patient has an important side effect that you want to deal with. And then the students playing the pharmacist would have to try to solve that situation by, for example, calling the physician and see whether or not we should, you know, adjust the dosage or completely change for another drug, they would have to articulate this plan in an authentic setting. So we also have at some point crisis resource management simulation for more advanced students with pharmacy technicians, and it turns out to be completely feasible in the context of pharmacy practice. It's not that different from the medical field when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in those examples you just raised, some of these same issues might come up, but for the two simulations that you used for the study, how did you manipulate complexity?
Of course, one of the goals of the study was also to understand how students perceive complexity, but we had to design tasks that we assumed were more simple or more complex for them. And for that, we were informed by what's been done in the literature at the moment. So we know as an educator, we could manipulate different factors in the situation so that we could be more or less complex. Of course, there are the environmental aspects of the situation. So for example, if you are familiar or not with, you know, a blood pressure monitor or a computer software, this can also be really part of the complexity if you're not familiar with it, or if there are a lot of pop-ups that come up and that you have to read quickly to be able to and seek for the information that you're looking for in the patient record. So in the environmental aspect, there could be these kind of aspects that could be modulated. From a clinical point of view, also, you can change different features in the patient's characteristics, like whether or not the patient has more or less comorbidities. And of course, they have more comorbidities, they tend to take a little more medication. And then if you have more medication to consider, drug interactions. So when you're trying to find a plan for the person, for example, if the person comes with a medication, you have to consider many drug interactions in a more complex patient, as opposed to a patient that is more simple, would probably take less medication, so less problems to anticipate, I guess. And there's also the social interactions that we try to control. So in the simple situations, we use friendlier patients, friendlier encounters, and probably no need to contact other healthcare professionals because there weren't many problems to discuss with them. But for a complex patient was not necessarily aggressive, but was expressing a little bit more anxiety about their, you know, healthcare problems. But the pharmacist would also have to consider whether or not they would have to call the physician, and if so, how to do so in a collaborative manner. So these were all factors that we could manipulate to make the situation more or less complex.
And that actually leads me right back to your title, which nicely alludes to both the research design and the results in it. You've had participants go through both a complex and a simpler simulation, and the title, for those who didn't catch it the first time, is Complex Learning Tasks Promote Reflective Practice. What was it about reflective practice that led you to believe that was an outcome measure worth pursuing or questioning for this particular environment? And in answering that, do you mind describing how you actually measure it?
So this is something that we understood better after collecting our qualitative data, although we did have some little information about it in the quantitative aspect of it, because we did sequential explanatory design, so we started collecting quantitative data. And in the cognitive questionnaire that we used, there are some items that focus on perception of learning. So we had a little impression that in the complex tasks, students, they had the feeling that they were learning a little bit more. So we wanted to dig that impression a little deeper. And in the semi-structured interviews we conducted with some of them, we actually found they were actually saying that when they were experiencing complex tasks, they knew that they were making more mistakes. They were completely aware of that. Although what they considered mistakes were just probably things that they didn't do as good as they would have wanted to. So when we were debriefing that, they were really interested in understanding what they could have done better. So since in the complex tasks, they felt that they did the best they could and it was actually really good, they weren't really as interested as they were for the complex tasks to understand what they could have done better. So that's how they expressed it when we met them during the interviews.
And so did it seem as though it was adding more motivation to people to continue to work at it? What do you think that the inducement to be more reflective in the way that you've seen it changed for these participants in terms of how they approach this particular task or their learning going forward?
Yeah, I think it's a question of probably motivation, although we didn't really assess that directly. I think it came out of the interviews that they were probably more motivated to understand what they did wrong and how they could do better in the future experience. So yeah, something about persistence at learning, but like I said, it's something that, you know, came out of the interviews, but we actually didn't really directly measure in this study.
And the combination of interviews and moving towards some quantitative measures was very intriguing by the study. And I wonder if I might just ask you to speak a little bit methodologically in terms of what the key features are of the sequential explanatory design that you just mentioned.
When we started designing this study, we really thought that adding qualitative results would really help us understand what we wanted to target. And I think that's an interesting thing that we added, because in the current literature, there aren't that many qualitative data that we have in the simulation-based research area. So we wanted to contribute a little bit with that. And it's the second time we're actually conducting this kind of method. So we were a little informed also by our previous research. What we did was have students experience the simulation and then collected quantitative data during the simulation training. We started analyzing that with mostly the cognitive load questionnaire that was informing us on whether or not students felt that the tasks were more or less complex. And then we wanted to understand a little bit more what was it in the task that made this more or less complex. So we used the intrinsic cognitive load items. So we asked students showing maximal variations in this intrinsic cognitive load questionnaire to help us understand a little better what it was about complexity and what it did on the learning process. So interviews took place a couple of weeks after the simulations, just after we analyzed roughly the quantitative data. We collected the qualitative data and then afterwards started analyzing it also with the lens of our quantitative data. So using also these two methodologies to really get a full picture of what was actually happening in the situation.
Given that this is a start towards a PhD, I know your exploration isn't complete, but I wonder if I can think about wrapping up this particular segment of the project by asking you to reflect on what you do with these results now. I think you mentioned at the very beginning that we've believed for a long time within medical education and other places that it's important to tailor the level of difficulty to the participant. I don't think you're disagreeing with the notion that things can be too complex for students. How do you find the right balance to enable the increase in reflective activities that you're describing while not making it overwhelming?
Well, that's still a good question, I think. That's not fully answered, but it's probably something that, you know, we still have to work on and still have to understand in the context of simulation. So when you're designing a situation, you have to make sure that, you know, your cognitive load that you impose on your students is adapted to their level. And when you're designing it, you don't want to have too many extraneous factors that, you know, would take up the cognitive resources of your students and would distract them from what they should actually really learn, which is called intrinsic cognitive load, actually. So for a long time, we thought that elements from the environment in the simulation was all part of extraneous load. And I think that this study shows that it's all a question of learning goals. And if your goal is for students to be able to master both a clinical content and be able to use elements from the environment, then this is all intrinsic cognitive load, and this is all according to your learning goals. But if your students are not familiar with elements of the environment, then you should be aware of that and be able perhaps to decrease a little bit the level of complexity of other aspects of your simulation. For example, perhaps your patient could be a little less complex, have a little less comorbidities, so that your students are able to deal with both certain aspects of the clinical content and elements of the environment. So I think it's about finding a balance of complexity of different elements. It's not only about the clinical contents, but it's also about everything that you can modulate in a simulation for all complexity of the task. That's what you should be aware of, I think, when you're designing it.
That's very helpful advice, and the paper, I'll just mention, includes additional details about environmental factors and the other cues or sources of information that had an influence on a student's reaction to these simulations. So I know that there's more to come, but I don't want to get into all the details for fear of the amount of time that it would take for us to discuss those. So just one last reminder, the paper we've been discussing is Simulation-Based Education for Novices, Complex Learning Tasks Promote Reflective Practice, and you'll find it in the April 2019 issue of Medical Education. Thank you, Marie-Laurence, both for this work and for taking the time to present it for us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much.